You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight at 7, it's Snap Judgment. Get ready, America. It's time to celebrate ourselves. Put on your sunglasses and open up the fire hydrants for the Snap Judgment Summer Special. Amazing stories about people making America their home. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First,
late yesterday, I canceled a carefully planned operation which was underway in Iran to position our rescue team for a later withdrawal of American hostages who've been held captive there since November 4th.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24/7.
Katrina exposed serious problems in our response capability at all levels of government. And to the extent that the federal government didn't fully do its job right, I take responsibility.
The challenge has been just making sure that consumers are actually able to get on a website, see those choices, and shop. And I think that we probably underestimated the complexities of building out a website that needed to work the way it should. There is a larger problem that I probably speak personally, but also as the administration, could have identified earlier, and that is the way the federal government does procurement.
That was President Jimmy Carter talking about the failed rescue attempt in Iran, President George W. Bush first complimenting the head of FEMA during Hurricane Katrina and then admitting later that relief efforts fell short, and finally President Obama discussing the failure of the Affordable Care Act website rollout.
Presidential failures are nothing new. They aren't the domain of one party or the other, and they can happen on issues as different as wars, natural disasters, and policy decisions. The question is, what leads to those failures and how can future presidents avoid those pitfalls?
Joining us to talk about the common elements of presidential failures and what future presidents can do to avoid them is Elaine Kmark. She's an adjunct lecturer in public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. She's also a senior fellow in the Governance Studies program at Brookings Institution and the director of their Center for Effective Public Management. Her most recent book is Why Presidents Fail and How They Can Succeed Again. Elaine, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Elaine, you lay out three key steps of governing well for presidents: policy, communication, and implementation. Can you give us an example of those three steps in relation to a particular issue?
Of course. The first thing I'd say is those three steps are equal in importance to good government or, frankly, to good leadership. And let's take the first example that you cited there, which was the failure of the Iranian hostage rescue back in 1980. They had come to the end of the road on negotiation. There was really, you know, they hadn't really nowhere to turn. And so a military option seemed very likely and probably a pretty good idea, although there were some notable dissenters. Communicating it was a no-brainer because Americans were terribly concerned in 1980 about the fate of those hostages. But in that instance, implementation was everything. And one of the themes that runs through the book, Why Presidents Fail, is that recently American presidents don't have enough interaction with and knowledge of the government that they run. And the consequence of that is that they fail on the third step. They fail to adequately implement the decisions that they make.
One of the challenges that all new presidents face is inheriting the behemoth bureaucracy that is the federal government plus the military on top of that. How big a factor is that in setting presidents up for success or, in many cases, failure?
Well, that's a great question because that's really at the core of the analysis. The good thing about the modern federal government is that almost at any point in time, somebody in the behemoth of the government, as you said, knows the answer that you're looking for. The bad thing is, of course, it costs us a lot of money. And also, presidents it's so big that presidents have a hard time knowing what works and where to look for things. This has gotten increasingly the case as the government has gotten bigger. Presidents have become consumed with talking and messaging at the expense of understanding the government that they run. And it blows up on them when they put in the hands of certain agencies important missions, and then the missions fail. In all the instances I talk about in the book, the warning signs about implementation problems were present for sometimes for decades before the president decided how to implement something. And they were knowable. And therefore, my plea in the book is to ask presidents to pay attention to their government and try to reduce at least the probability of failure.
Well, and just to make that even more complex, the two parties have defined themselves and each other in terms of how they each view the structure and purpose of government. How would you describe each party's position and how that impacts their ability to lead and to succeed?
Well, both parties really are at fault here because they both operate with stereotypes. The Republican Party starts with the proposition that the whole darn thing is a mess, a waste of money, and that everybody in the government is incompetent. The Democrats start with the assumption that we're not spending enough, we should spend some more, and all the people in the government will automatically do whatever the president wants and have it done right. Neither is obviously correct because the government is so big that at any given point in time, something in the federal government is going very right and something is going very wrong. So take the last example you used of the failed websites during Obamacare. The president there ends up saying there's something wrong with the way the federal government procures information technology. Well, literally, 6 weeks after he said that, two astronauts walked in space and for 5 hours, tethered to the space station, repaired a cooling pump on the space station, miles above the Earth. The technology that allowed them to do that, from the spacesuits to the space station itself, were bought by the federal government in exactly the same way that the technology to set up the websites were. Federal bureaucrats at NASA contracted with people who make spacesuits and with Boeing, which makes the giant, space station. So it is a perfect example of how within literally 6 weeks of each other, the government could completely screw up in one part and perform what's really close to a miracle in another part. And that's why it's important for presidents to understand what the capacities are in their government.
We're talking right now with Elaine Kmark. She's director of the Center for Effective Public Management at the Brookings Institution, and her most recent book is Why Presidents Fail and How They Can Succeed Again.
And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. What presidential failures stand out in your memory? Can you imagine a way that those situations could have been handled better by the president in question? What would the next president need to do to gain and keep your trust? And how can a president, how could an administration bounce back from a big failure like the ones we're talking about? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation now with Elaine Kmark. Her most recent book is Why Presidents Fail and How They Can Succeed Again.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you see as some of the greatest presidential failures or successes? What led to failure or success in that case? How could things have been handled better? Do you work for the federal government? What works well? What could be improved in the way a president manages that fairly large organization? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org.
And Elaine, you say that one common failure of presidents is to not understand the capacity of the people and agencies that are under them. Can you give us a particularly striking example of that?
Yeah. One of the things I talk about in the book is the scandals at the Veterans Administration during Obama's second term. The fact is that even in the transition from Bush to Obama, there were warning signs that things were not going well at the Veterans Administration. There were government reports on it. There were stories about it. A lot was out there to indicate that this was a troubled agency. It was having a hard time coping with all the new business from the Afghan-Iraq vets. They had new mandates, but not necessarily enough new money. Things were getting to a crisis point. And yet, when the story blew up, the president and the president's people were clearly surprised. They were clearly, they seemed to not have anticipated this. And yet, people had known it for many years before. So that is the kind of thing that maybe a president should start paying attention to when they come into office. Where's the trouble in this great big thing called the federal government? What do they do and what do they know? And where are the trouble signs?
In the montage that we heard at the start of this segment, both former President George W. Bush and President Obama referred to themselves as being more or less one and the same as their administration, and as a result, needing to take responsibility for government failures. Is that a reasonable expectation of a president?
Well, that's the interesting thing about government, about presidential failure. You know, nobody expects President Obama to write code. Nobody expected George H. Bush to, you know, deliver water and ice to the city of New Orleans. Nobody expected President Carter to fly the helicopters into the desert. So I don't mean that they obviously don't have the direct responsibility for the mission. But what they do have is they have the responsibility for placing the mission in an organization that is capable of doing it. And that's a place where they have continually fallen down on the job. And that's one of the things I think that they could do to improve the probability of success as opposed to failure.
Let's go to the phones, and Jack in Milwaukee is up first. Hi, Jack.
Hi.
Hi.
Jimmy Carter, I liked him as president. One thing where I think he made a mistake was picking Paul Volcker as the head of the Federal Reserve. And when the press asked him why he did it, he said, to appease the business community. Hmm. Yeah, well, he appeased the business community, all right. But what he also hurt Carter's chances of beating Reagan in 1980. He jacked up the interest rates, I think, as high as 20%.
And thanks for that call, Jack. Elaine, so it sounds like part of it was how the decision was communicated.
Yeah, part of that was how the decision was communicated. And I think that the caller is definitely onto something. I mean, one of the things that the two things really hurt President Carter's reelection in 1980. One was the failure of the Iranian hostages, which was a military failure. And the other was the poor economy, which was at the time, you know, really hobbled by both high interest rates and high unemployment. I'm not sure that you can put all of that at Paul Volcker's feet, but clearly the stewardship of the economy was as big a problem for Jimmy Carter as the failure of the rescue mission.
Elaine, it does seem like there was a time in the past when U.S. presidents had maybe not complete trust of the American public, but kind of trust until given a reason not to trust. Was that mm-hmm. really the case, or is that just a case of us thinking back to non-existent good old days?
No, that's verifiable. Gallup and other polling organizations began asking the question way back in the late 50s, early 60s. Do you trust the federal government to do the right thing? Always, most of the time, sometimes, and never. And that line of trust has gone down over successive generations, regardless of the party in power, regardless of the state of the economy. It's just been on a free fall. And part of it, I think, is that our parents and grandparents saw presidents and a federal government that got us out of the Great Depression, won the war against the Nazis and against Japan, and, you know, basically were successful at doing what they said they were going to do. Starting in the 70s with Vietnam, we begin to encounter a series of governmental failures. And you can track that exactly with the amount of trust that people lack in the current federal government.
And Elaine, the title of your book is Why Presidents Fail and How They Can Succeed Again. And I want to zero in on that second half. In your study of public management and the functioning of the government at the federal level, what do you think is the single most important thing for future presidents to do in order to succeed in winning the public's trust?
I think they have to stop talking and start governing. I think they spend way too much of their precious time doing one, as they call it, message event. That's what we called it in the White House, and they still call it that. One message event after another. And what they don't spend any time doing is thinking through the policy, not just from the inception, because most of them think seriously about policy, not just the communication, but the third step they let go. Who's going to implement this? What organization in the government is going to do it? How's that organization doing? Does that organization have the ability to do what we're asking them to do? And so my plea in this book is that our next president, whoever he or she is, spends more time on the business of government. And the reason that's so important is that once you get into one of these messes, like the ones you illustrated at the beginning of this segment, no speech in the world can get you out of trouble. Doesn't matter how eloquent you are, what a great communicator you are. If you're in a mess and the websites don't work or the helicopters crash, you know, you can't talk your way out of that. And I think that one of the things that happens to presidents is they go from campaigning and they kind of keep campaigning. And they often miss the fact that once they're in office, it's reality that matters, what they can actually deliver.
Well, Elaine, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you, and I think we'll want to check in with you when we know who that next president might be.
Sounds like a good idea.
That was Elaine Kmark, Senior Fellow in the Governance Studies Program at Brookings Institution and Director of their Center for Effective Public Management. Her most recent book is Why Presidents Fail and How They Can Succeed Again. And you can weigh in on this question about presidential failures and successes and trusting the federal government on the Central Time Facebook page.